Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Pope Benedict says he is coming to the Holy Land as a pilgrim of peace. Ahead of his week-long visit to Jordan, Israel and the Palestinian territories that begins this Friday. As part of the celebrations marking the International Year of Astronomy, we hear how astronomers from the Vatican's own observatory are seeing double. And speaking Hebrew in the Vatican Library. A new catalogue details all of the Vatican's collection of Hebrew manuscripts. Benedict says he is coming to the Holy Land as a pilgrim of peace and is eagerly looking forward to being with the people of Jordan, Israel and the Palestinian territories. His remarks came in a special greeting at the end of his Wednesday general audience. Let's hear what he had to say.
I'm eagerly looking forward to being with you and to sharing with your aspirations and hopes as well as your pains and struggles. I will be coming among you as a pilgrim of peace. My primary intention is to visit the places made holy by the life of Jesus and to pray at them for the gift of peace and unity for your families and all those from the Holy Land and the Middle East is home. Among the many religious and civic gatherings which will take place over the course of the week, will be meetings with representatives from the Muslim and Jewish communities with whom great strides have been made in dialogue and cultural exchange. In a special way, I warmly greet the Catholics of the region and ask you to join me in praying that the visit will bear much fruit for the spiritual and civic life of all who dwell in the Holy Land. May we all praise God for his goodness. May we all be people of hope. May we all be steadfast in our desire and efforts for peace.
Pope Benedict speaking at his weekly general audience. And now we go over to Tracy McClure, who presents the rest of today's programme.
Four hundred years ago this year, Galileo Galilei peered through a telescope for the first time in an attempt to understand the workings of the planets and the stars. To celebrate that historic event, the United Nations has called 2009 the International Year of Astronomy. Well, the Vatican is taking part in the celebrations with the participation of its own observatory and Jesuit astronomers, and through a series of seminars, conferences, and an October exhibit of historic astronomical instruments at the Vatican Museums. But just how has the Vatican been involved in cutting-edge astronomy itself? I was intrigued by one recent project that had me seeing double. Vatican astronomers teamed up with NASA, the U.S. National Observatory, and a string of American universities in a recent project to investigate twin stars and planet formation. While the Earth has one star, the Sun, they wondered how many other planets might be out there with double suns. Two suns like those Luke Skywalker watches as they set on the horizon in the 1977 Star Wars film classic. Though the Vatican has its own observatory at the Pope's summer residence in hilly Castel Gandolfo outside Rome, the vastly expanded city has brightened the skies, making stargazing difficult for the Jesuit astronomers there. For this reason, in 1981, the observatory founded a second research center, the Vatican Observatory Research Group, based at the University of Arizona in Tucson. It was from there that the Vatican astronomers conducted their research in the Twin Star Project. Vice Director of the Vatican's Tucson Observatory, Father Chris Corbelli, says there might be many planets where Luke Skywalker could gaze on a double sunset.
sons for Luke Skywalker's people on his planet were very close together. Not hugely far apart as we have been finding them, but they were very close together. And so the question is, was that a true depiction? As far as we can see, yes, it is. And it's not only true, but for those stars that are in doubles, that are twins, so together as they sort of go around each other in their lifetimes, then the tendency is to have planetary material, more planetary material, the closer they are together.
Talk about global warming. What would an extra sun do to the Earth's temperature?
It would certainly be hotter than a planet with just one sun, yes, because you'll have, let's say, twice the output of heat from two suns rather than one sun.
But it was the planetary material found near these stars that most interested Father Corbally and his colleague Richard Gray of Appalachian State University in North Carolina. That's what they were working on when they were asked to join the project to investigate whether planets form around stars that are twins.
We obviously know that from our own solar system that we've got planets around our sun, which is the single sun. But if you've got double suns, are you going to get planets? And so that's the question. What's been found by the planet study of planets around other stars is that indeed about 50 out of the 200 planets that have been found around other stars are indeed around stars that are twins. But these stars are very far apart, very far. So how about stars that are much closer together, of which there are a whole bundle of these twin stars? Are you going to get planets? So that was the question.
The question that still puzzles astronomers like Father Corbally, though, is what he calls the nature or nurture of planet formation. Like babies, are planets born with certain characteristics? Or is it circumstance, the environment, that makes them develop the way they do?
Someone's characteristics, are they, you know, what they are born with, or is it how they grow up that's the characteristics they have when they're an adult? So the same thing with this planetary material, this dusty and rocky material around planets. Is it, you know, the way they are born? And if their planets or suns are close together, then they'll have a lot of this dusty, rocky material. Or because they are close together, then they make a lot of dusty and rocky material as they go through their early lifetime. So this is still a question that's out there. We'll have to do some other investigations to try and get an answer to that. But so this is maybe an interest and a surprise in store.
So, what surprises might these latest findings eventually lead to?
What we can know is that, forming planets seems to be much more, common after this study. So, yes, we knew that single stars, like our own sun, probably have planetary material around them. Yes, we knew that, there's fewer stars that are twins that are very widely separated also have planetary material around them. But now we know that, practically all twin stars, except those in a kind of an intermediate separation, do have this planetary material. So what it tells us is that the formation of planets in our universe is pretty darn common, in the order of 40%. Of the stars that we find seem to have this planetary material.
Researchers now have a better understanding about how our own solar system and planets came together. So where does this leave the Big Bang theory about how the universe came about? Are we any closer to finding out the real answer to one of humanity's greatest conundrums?
It certainly goes back to the story of how from the beginnings of the universe, the Big Bang, which current best model, then we get two planets like our own Earth, and so life on these planets. And you were asking also about whether a planet with a twin star would be hotter. So what you'd need then for life is that a planet would have to be rather further away than our own Earth is from our own sun.
It's quite impressive, Father, that this is a joint project with so many important institutions in the United States. You presented this project to NASA. You were involved with the California Institute of Technology, the University of Arizona, so many different institutions.
National Observatory, yes.
Is it unusual that the Vatican does participate in such widely respected research projects?
Well, as usual, one comes into these things somewhat accidentally, but with other colleagues, including Richard Gray, who's from Appalachia State University, we've been interested in our neighbors, you know, our neighboring stars for the last several years. And so we're doing a look-see, a survey of our neighbors. There end up around 3,600 stars that are within a certain distance out from our own sun, and we've been getting the good information about these stars. And because many of these stars were in the ones that this group were interested in investigating, for the dusty, whether they had dust around them and rocky debris, then we were asked to, myself and Richard Gray were asked to join the project and contribute what we'd found out about our neighboring stars.
Now, you're a priest, a Jesuit priest, and I'm just curious to know how, when you go around, and I'm sure you give conferences and give talks at various institutions around the world about your research, do people look at you differently, strangely, because you're a priest and an astronomer at the same time?
For those who don't know the more than 400 years of the Vatican's involvement with astronomy, yes, that they will say, what? The Vatican has an observatory. For those who do, then it isn't a surprise. But as you say, for a lot of people, it's a surprise that the Vatican has this very professional involvement in astronomy.
How did you conduct this research on the suns? I mean, were you using special telescopes? Tell me more about that.
Well, the background data, which myself and my colleague Richard Gray did, were done with telescopes in the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere, so Earth-based telescopes, a very modest size. But we were getting very good and consistent data. So it's those that we input saying, what to expect from an ordinary star on its own if we found it out there. Then what was the additional data that this team, the rest of the team were producing, was data from a satellite, but really it's a space observatory that lies some distance back from the Earth in our Earth journey around the Sun, called the Spitzer Telescope. And this is very sensitive in the infrared, or the heat region, of radiation. And it was looking with, as it were, this Spitzer telescope's eyes, its heat-sensitive eyes, that we're able to see the additional information that, around these stars and see how what we expected from the data that Richard Gray and I gave, how the heat data differed from this, that then gave the clue that, yes, what we're seeing is the glow, the warmth, as it were, from this dusty debris.
Father Corbelly likes to call his twin stars neighborhood stars because they're right in our backyard, so to speak, just 200 light years away. Though that might sound like a lot, it's not, especially when your galaxy's backyard is 100,000 light years wide.
Which is really, kind of the end of your arm as far as the space is concerned. So kind of reach out and feel around in your back garden and, see what's in the neighborhood.
I came across, Father, a very interesting quote from the 17th century astronomer Galileo Galilei. I'm sure you're very familiar with that that name.
Who, an interesting gentleman, certainly.
He was at odds with the church, of course, over his discovery that the earth revolved around the sun. He said in this quote, and I'll just read it to you, "I do not feel obliged to believe that the same God who has endowed us with sense, reason, and intellect has intended us to forego their use." What do you make of that in today's context? And would you say that the church has matured in the way it approaches scientific research over the centuries?
Yes, so using sense, reason, and intellect is what we are asked to do by God. That's our God-given gifts. Now, what we've needed to learn is what's the appropriate use of these, the sense, reason, and intellect in the various disciplines of study. So what's appropriate in theology and, say, the study of scriptures is not appropriate, or you're answering different questions in science. And obviously in Galileo's day, it is trying to distinguish what questions were appropriate for science and what questions were appropriate for theology. So that was the difficulty.
How does the astronomer churchman, Father Corbelly, feel about his own scientific work and his latest findings?
Just the joy of discovery. What we do it for is obviously to find out these new things and to find the fascination of the universe in which, God has put us. And so it's there's always a joy in this discovery. It's not a huge discovery that we make with the Spitzer telescope and with the Nearby Stars project of Richard Gray and myself, but it's another little sort of brick there in the whole wall of edifice, let's say, of our understanding. So it's fun to be part of. It's great too that the church is sensitive to this kind of discovery and to the joys of the universe, the joys which the Creator has given us.
You make me feel diminished in a certain way, because I'm just sitting here in a studio and you've contributed in such a big way to a huge scientific discovery. Do you feel God's presence when you are doing this work?
One feels a connection, certainly, with God, because one's involved with God's creation. So there is a relationship there with the Creator. So yes, a lot of the work is obviously sometimes tedious, certainly very methodical and doing things and needs concentration. But it's the times that you can step back, such as talking with you, and say, gosh, isn't it wonderful? And isn't it wonderful to learn that little bit more about our God-given universe?
Stargazer Father Chris Corbelly, Vice Director of the Vatican Observatory Research Center in Tucson, Arizona. An impressive catalog of Hebrew manuscripts in the Vatican Apostolic Library was recently presented here in the Vatican. The thick volume lists all of the Vatican Library's some 800 medieval manuscripts penned or printed in Hebrew. The project represents an important effort towards greater cultural collaboration between Israeli and Vatican institutions. While the catalog compiled by the Institute of Microfilmed Hebrew Manuscripts at the National Library of Israel in Jerusalem was published by the Vatican Apostolic Library in April 2008, Professor Maliki Beit Aryeh, Professor of Codicology and Paleography at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem, was one of two Jewish scholars to have spent 5 years studying the manuscripts in the Vatican Library.
While the Biblioteca Apostolica Vaticana accumulated and preserved one of the most important collections of Hebrew medieval manuscripts. We in Jerusalem are engaged in cataloging all the manuscripts in the world. And the joint project was to prepare, to produce a very detailed catalog which will cover all the manuscripts, all the Hebrew manuscripts at the Vatican Library in a very updated manner, including identification of the date and the locality of production of all the manuscripts, and of course a very detailed analysis of the text. And it was carried out by a large team of scholars in Jerusalem, and by two of us who were working in situ in the, at the library for over 5 years in treating mainly the physical aspect and the so-called codicological aspects of the manuscript. The library granted us more than warm welcome, but any assistance that we needed, and they encouraged us in this project. We eventually prepared the catalog, and the Biblioteca Vaticana printed it and published it as a joint project.
Is some of this material digitalized, available on the internet?
First of all, the catalog, which is about 800 pages, is very shortly will be available online in both sites of the National Library in Jerusalem and at the site of the Vatican Library. As for the, if you mean digitized online access to all the manuscript, this is still a dream. I hope it will come through.
What does this mean for scholars of the antiquities in the Holy Land?
Well, it means to hundreds and hundreds of scholars all over the world who are dealing with the Jewish heritage, the classical and medieval texts, many faceted texts of in Hebrew characters, and that covers from biblical studies to medieval science and medicine and philosophy and literature and everything.
You sound very excited about it.
Oh yes.
What does it mean for you and your own studies?
In my own studies, the Vatican has the best collections of Hebrew manuscripts with regard to my own discipline, which is paleography and codicology, the history of medieval book, and the Vatican boasts on many, many remarkable items which are constantly studied and will be studied.
Prefect of the Vatican Library, Monsignor Cesare Pazzini, describes the catalog as an extraordinary collection, fruit of some 10 years of study, and what he calls exemplary collaboration between the cultural institutions of the Holy See and Israel. Well, Monsignor Pazzini says that even the manuscripts themselves offer an example of joint collaboration between Christians and Jews. Some of the Vatican manuscripts, for example, were commissioned by important representatives of the Jewish community in Europe, but the inscriptions, the binding, and the illustrations were carried out by Christians. While working together with Jewish cultural institutions, Monsignor Pazzini says, illustrates the Apostolic Library's universal mission at the service of culture. When people join forces in research, some of the most surprising discoveries and achievements can be made.
The Vatican has a spirit of universality, and the spirit of universality is the spirit of the culture. In the culture, we collaborate together, and if I have a fruit of my research and you have another fruit, we can together proceed in the research.
To combine the research together.
Yes.
And the Vatican Library, of course, is one of the most important in the world.
There are many important libraries, but Vatican has a very great tradition and a very great number of materials, manuscripts, printed books. And so we have this attitude to go on in research to serve people coming. I'm new in the library, I'm prefect, but I found that very good situation. People coming, researchers coming in the library, find a very good accoglienza. How is
reception?
Reception, yes.
Mm-hmm. No, I was talking to some of the Hebrew scholars, and they were saying very much that they were felt extremely welcomed.
They told me that they were satisfied because of everyone helping them, the distributor too, not only the scholars in our library.
While the road to dialogue with the Jewish and other faiths may sometimes be a bumpy one, Israel's ambassador to the Holy See, Mordechai Levy, says the cooperation between the Vatican Library and Israeli institutions represents an important cultural initiative that shouldn't be underestimated.
I think that this is a very important occasion to show how important cultural collaboration between Israel and the Santa Sede is. I think we will be poor if we will only restrict the dimension of the relations to political and religious dimensions. The cultural is very important, and today was a good presentation what can be done in good spirit and in good cooperation also for the future. The dimension should be very enriched. And I think this was today an enrichment of the relations.
Israel's ambassador to the Holy See, Mordechai Levy. Well, that brings today's program to a close. I'm Tracy McClure, thanking you for joining me for the last half hour. Tune in again tomorrow at the same time and on this same channel for the next English feature program, or you can hear us at any time of the day or night by clicking on our website. That's vaticanradio.org. Just look for the English service. We'd also love to hear your comments or suggestions, so send us an email. We appreciate snail mail, too. Just send us a note to the English Service at Vatican Radio, Piazza Pia 3, Vatican City, 00120. Again, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.